Well, well, well. Welcome back to Joyride. I am Jared Brandon Flandy, and
I am Adam Mendenhall.
And this is the show where we talk about all things transportation and adventure. You know, I thought I'd try that because I said vehicles to adventure, but you know, we sometimes we cover more than vehicles.
So that's true.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A broad range.
So we are back for another season. We took a small break, other than just scheduling and whatnot. We just thought it would be a nice, good excuse to recharge a bit and make sure we're at our top notch. High geared performance for our listeners here every time we sit down to do this. And I noticed maybe high geared was too much of a cliche, but I said it anyway. All right, Adam. So, of course, first thing we need to do, we need to make a couple announcements, and we don't have too many. By all means, we, of course, always encourage you to check out our Patreon that is in the description below. Our parent company's website Starstruck, which is www.starstruckcompany.com. There's lots of fun things you could find there. And also, by all means, our friend Noah Norwood, of course, check out his podcast, the Hot Rod Kid Podcast. He talks about all things hot rods, and it's a professional automotive restorer working on Mustangs and old 4.8 V8s and that kind of thing. And once again, that is the Hot Rod Kid Podcast that is available on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Another thing I'd like to point out, too, is for our story portions to these episodes. Those are scripts that me and Adam come up with the ideas, and we sit down and we write them and do all the research for that. So if you ever want to actually read these scripts, you can find them on the Starstruck Medium page. There'll be another link in the description box below. And that also features our sources. So we are very thorough about what sources we use and that sort of thing. So if you want to take a look at all that, by all means, check out the Starstruck Medium page for the scripts to this show. So with that said, Adam, what is our topic going to be for our casual chat today?
Well, we're kind of just going on random finds that include barn finds and just things that you stumble across, whether it's a garage sale, a state sale, or an official auction.
Or just surprising things you would not expect to see there.
That's true.
All right, well, you start off here, and I have some ideas, but you tell me some of your thoughts and feelings on those.
You know, you just never know sometimes. You know, you get out and about, and you go to some of these auctions, and especially estate sales, sometimes there's nothing, and then other times it's like, wow, I can't believe this is here, and how did this happen? How did something just get parked away and forgotten and left in this kind of condition, you know, whether it's in bad condition or good? So it's always interesting, and often more times than not, that's where the term, you know, the coin term barn find comes into play, because you end up on some of these rural estates, and it's amazing what some of these old farmers will just stash away in their garage, you know, often purchased for recreation, but they never really use them.
You know, that term barn find, I mean, I've heard that so often that you almost think of it as a cliche, but it's not. I mean,
no.
I mean, do you have any, like, is there any, like, kind of strong memories of examples of things that have been literally found in barns that you know of?
Yeah, my dad, I mean, again, he grew up on a farm and is a farmer himself. And when I was young, him and my mom used to go to a lot of, you know, estate sales and so forth. And a lot of it was shopping for antiques, but I know a couple times my dad came across some incredible deals on some old vintage motorcycles, ones that he had actually ridden when they were new, you know, in the 1970s, but some of the old two-strokers, air-cooled two-strokes from the 70s. One in particular was a 1973 Honda 250 that he came across in an estate sale that was over in Eastern Oregon. And this is in the, gosh, I mean, late 80s, early 90s, and a farmer had it stashed away. And it was one of those things that there was equipment for sale, and this bike wasn't for sale, but my dad noticed it and talked to the farmer, and he's like, you know what, I've had this thing, I haven't ridden it, and it was like 15 years, and it was, I wasn't sure if it'd even kick over, and believe it or not, it wasn't completely seized up. My dad kind of just haggled with the guy and ended up getting packaging that into some other stuff that they were going to purchase from the sale and ended up purchasing. So that was a memorable one because that did sit in the shop, I remember, at home, and it was, you know, it sat in the barn and it had a lot of just, you know, some junk on it, but it cleaned up really nice. And what made the difference was it was undercover, so it wasn't just left out in the open elements. And that was something that was neat to see, because my dad actually got it running again and took him back to the nostalgia of the 1970s when he rode those when they were new.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And I've heard, just like, it seems to be it's usually always higher end stuff too. You rarely ever hear about some old Honda, or at least not a desirable Chevy, being like just left somewhere. It's usually always something you'd think that would be really covered up and protected, right?
Very true, especially today. I mean, you see some of this stuff. I mean, one that comes to mind right off the top of my head, and I'm sure many of our listeners have probably seen some of these articles as well, as some of these abandoned supercars over in Dubai and places like that. You have old Lamborghini Countaches and new Lamborghinis and Ferraris, and just left out and about, left at abandoned estates even, or just left out in the open. It's like, you just can't help but think on, how did this happen? How does this happen to a car level?
I've heard about it too. A lot of them in Europe, you know, where they'll just open up a giant, you know, shop or a warehouse, and there's just cars that are, you know, like, you know, Ferraris, Lamborghinis, covered in, you know, 7 inches of dust, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, how did these get here? I mean, were these bought illegally? I mean, like, what's the story here? That's the thing. And I'm sure you could usually find the stories on these things, but the stories are always pretty elusive, I've noticed.
They are, and some of them, you know, of course, are linked to some type of bankruptcy or financial issues or something along the line, where people just dumped everything. And again, it kind of gets pretty elusive to get the real fine details. But nonetheless, it's just astonishing. Especially with the value of some of these older exotic cars, going, how did this thing just get left out? So it's wild.
Well, it's like, I have this book that my parents got me a long time called Sleeping Beauties. I was just showing it to you. And for, like, it was a photographer went there in the 80s, but eventually the location was revealed, but it was somewhere in rural France. But it was just dozens and dozens and dozens of old, like, valuable old cars, like 1930s kind of things, you know. Like, I think you saw their, you know, Cords, but mm-hmm. I think there's even Astons and Alfa Romeos. It's just like, it just, you know, just withering away, you know. It's just like, how does that happen?
Oh, exactly. You know, and another one that comes to mind is, and I'm sure some of our listeners are familiar with this story as well, but in case you're not, the Labreck Chevrolet collection in Pierce, Nebraska. This was the dealership that had run from 1946 to 1996 and shut its doors and was literally frozen in time, had over 500 cars, and many of them vintage. And the neat thing was, as far as the aesthetics go, the dealership really hadn't been remodeled or upgraded since the late 1960s. And so this place had its doors shut since 1996, and it was in around 2013, they started to open it back up and had their first auction. And it was just amazing. You had cars from the 60s that had 1 mile on them, still had the factory floor mats in. And so it was one of the most incredible, one of those urban legends that turned out to be true in recent history. And again, the collection the guy had at the dealership and his home was astounding. Some of the cars had sat out and weathered away in the weather, but again, most of them very low miles. I mean, there were some, again, just like 1 or 2 miles, and it was literally new old stock. And part of the thing that was really astonishing was the dealership. It was kind of like the dust just settled. They just closed the doors and shut it up. And so you had old parts manuals from the 70s, the 60s. I mean, old stock, you know, AC Delco parts on the shelf. And so it was literally like walking back in time when they opened this thing up, when they started doing their little preview of what was going to be auctioned off. Mm-hmm. So
it's like amazing, amazing. And like, and one of the, like, in terms of my personal experiences, you know, you have the, was it the Oregon Steam Up? Right. Yep. And that's basically, if anyone's not familiar with that, it's predominantly old farm machinery. So steam up. So, you know, like those old case, you know, what do you call them? Traction engines. Is that what you called those?
Yeah. A lot of those are traction engines.
Yeah. So that, but they actually do have a car museum there as well. And it's a lot of old Chevys and Cadillacs and that kind of thing. But so every year they always usually have some one surprising thing in there. And one particular year they had a Jensen Interceptor. Never seen one. I mean, other outside, I may have seen one fly by in the UK or something, but like never seen one here anyway. And then one year, I believe I sent you pictures of this when I saw it, but they had an early Alfa Romeo Grand Prix car, but specifically it was a Team Ferrari Alfa Romeo car.
Whoa.
And so if anyone's not familiar with that, you know, Ferrari originally just was a racing team. It still is, but they were the the team drove Alphas before they started building their own branded Ferraris, right? Right, Adam?
Yep.
Yeah. And apparently, if my memory serves me correct, the current owner who lives here in Oregon, he found it in a barn somewhere in South America.
Wow.
And it's still, I mean, it was clean. It was a little rough in places, but part of that was it still had a little patina, but it still was the original paint. But it was the paint, it was the quality was good enough. He didn't want to repaint it. I totally understand that. You know, it was flaking here and there, but for the most part, it darkened a bit. I don't know if it was that back then. I don't know if it was that candy apple red or if it was kind of a darker red. I don't know if that was age that did that, but it was kind of a darker red. But nonetheless, the original paint on that thing and a barn find.
Go figure, you know. And another thing that comes to mind, again, a little off the car subject, but it was an old farmer, and I can't remember. I want to say it was somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, perhaps, but I don't know the location where the guy bought this piece of property, and it was an old farmhouse. I mean, dating back, it was, you know, 100 years old plus. And when he was going around to do repairs to the barn, he was going through, you know, repairing the roof sections and whatnot. Well, he found a satchel of coins buried away in the gutters of this barn that had Civil War era coins that were worth, it was just thousands of dollars in value. I forget. It was a wild story, but again, this was on the property he purchased going, wow, look what was left behind. You know, the old adage of the farmer stuffing the mattress with his, you know, because he doesn't trust the bank during the Great Depression. With money, I mean, this was a different version of that, where it was out in the gutters. He had some coins stashed.
On that note, my grandpa would tell me stories about that. They literally did that stuff during the Depression. They would shove money in coffee cans and bury it.
Well, you know, and you could understand the distrust people had with banks back then. But the problem with doing that on a farm was, well, what would happen if, you know, they didn't share that information and the person passed away, which often happened, and then the family liquidated the estate, not knowing, hey, grandpa had $100,000 buried in coffee cans out in the back.
Yeah, exactly. When I was a little kid growing up, I was always, you know, a lot of these barn find stories I heard, and, you know, as I've grown up too, I've noticed one pattern at least. It's usually a little old lady that owns the property it's on, and the husband or son bought the car, for example, brand new, and then the husband or son died from some type of circumstances, and then you got this beautiful, you know, vintage Mercedes that she doesn't really even know how valuable it is, just sitting in there. I've heard some DeLorean stories that way too.
That's true. Yeah, there are some like that where again they just had no idea what they had, or the thing was just sitting in a garage, and before the previous owner passed, it had just sat in the garage for years, you know, under a cover. And it's just like going, and a lot of those stories, you know, track back to people that are the original owners too, which is incredible, going, my God, this is a one owner car, you know.
Easy to track that paperwork.
Yeah, it just reminds me of such, you know, just you never know what you find. And a buddy of mine I went to high school with, his dad owned an exhaust shop in town. And it was interesting, you know, he get different cars that come in from time to time. And this is, again, another little old lady story. This little old lady one day came in just for, you know, she didn't have an exhaust leak, but just, you know, basic service, oil change, because she had heard good things and she was upset with service she had received elsewhere in town. Well, she had a 1985 Buick Regal Turbo that was all original. It didn't even have, I want to see the mileage on it, was under 40,000 original miles. And anyways, my buddy's dad, who was the exhaust shop owner, did some work on it and started chatting with her, and she's like, yeah, I'm really just kind of, you know, looking to downgrade to something else. I've had this for years, but I don't drive it a lot, and I like vans better. And long story short, he was able to purchase the car off her, and that was his first car in high school. He gave it to his son, who was my buddy that I went to high school with, and wow, I mean, that was something. It had the 3.8 liter Buick single turbo V6, and that was an impressive car, being all original. And unfortunately, the car didn't stay in that type of condition for terrible amount of time due to it being a, you know, 16, 17 year old driver. Things happened, modifications. But I'll tell you, I went riding in that thing a couple times, and I was that's a grin ear to ear on one of those turbo cars from the 80s that was still in great condition.
Okay, on that note, there's actually two notes on that, but to segue directly from 1980s turbo cars. I don't know if you remember this, but I was on going on Craigslist, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years ago, maybe, and I saw a 1980s era Maserati Biturbo available in the Portland metro area. And it was $800.
Oh, my God.
And it looked clean, all right? And there wasn't much of a description. It just said what it was. It gave its miles. It didn't really specify if it ran or not, if I remember correctly. So I called my brother, you know, who's a rally driver. I said, do you think this would be worth the money, or is this just going to be a massive headache? And he goes, well, it's funny that you told me that, because I was just talking to Jason Griffith, who's the owner of Nameless Performance, you know, the exhaust mm-hmm. manufacturer, and he said he saw it, and they were talking about it. So apparently almost everyone within the Portland Metro car circle had discussed and deliberated on whether to purchase this 1980s Biturbo or not. I ended up not doing it, and no one else I know did, so I'm curious who ended up with it. But well, that's the thing we were talking about. It's like, yeah, sure, let's say it runs, it's $800, but one thing goes wrong on it, it's probably going to be an $1,800 motor mount or something. Who knows?
Who knows, or something like that. Yeah, but you can't help it just be tempted by the price, right?
It's like Maserati, $800.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh.
Well, not to get so wildly off topic, but that reminds me. I mean, you can buy a cheap Maserati. You could buy that Chrysler Maserati, right?
Yes. In fact, I have a story on that. My uncle on my mother's side purchased one of those in 1987, brand new from the dealership.
From a Chrysler dealer?
Yes. Okay. And he was friends with at the time and still is today, with the owners of that Chrysler dealership, who also own the Mercedes dealership. And this is in Yakima, Washington. And I think he paid quite a premium for that. 1987, I want to say that car was around $30,000 or something, and it was a single turbo.
Good chunk of change back then.
I think that was a single turbo V6, and, you know, those were pretty much, in most people's eyes, a piece of junk car. Now, his always looked nice. Of course, being friends with the dealership owners, his has always kept in pristine condition, but it was a convertible, and the neat thing at the time was he ended up with, when they got rid of the Maserati label, they gifted him the dealership sign, which unfortunately I was unable to make off with before that got sold off in a random garage sale. So some lucky person had a little find of their own.
Now help me out, because I've never been very clear on this particular car. Okay, now this was when Chrysler owned Lamborghini at the time, if I... memory serves me. Does that sound right?
It sounds right. Yep.
So what was this thing? Was it a Chrysler? Was it a Maserati? Was it a rebadge thing, or was it just a nameplate thing? Do you know?
You know, it was, you know, it's kind of hard to explain, but it was, for the most intensive purposes, kind of just a nameplate rebadging. I mean, it was where Chrysler took on the manufacturing and the Maserati name, and they did it in their image, you might say. So all intents and purposes, it was a Chrysler with a Maserati badge. I mean, and that was the thing. When Maserati changed hands over the years, that was kind of what happened. You know, I think the best versions are obviously when Ferrari took on Maserati, because underneath it was a Ferrari engine mm-hmm. in those Maseratis, and that's why they ran so well. But yeah, that Chrysler era was not the best for Maserati's name, just naturally at the time period.
So it's like not buying an actual Gucci handbag, but buying kind of a replica Gucci handbag.
Okay. But, mind you know, 1987, 1988, I mean, the car did look nice. It was a convertible. It stood out. It had a different grille. You know, you saw that Maserati little crown on the front. And, I mean, if you're pulling up to the golf course or country club, I can't. You stood out, right?
You did.
I mean, you stood out, and it looked nice, but it was just it was not a reliable car, and the performance bang for the buck wasn't there either.
I saw one once in McMinnville, and it was literally like shit brown. I'm not exaggerating. Oh, yeah. The other one too, yeah, locally that always made me scratch my head. I don't know if you ever noticed this, but you go down Highway 99, and you're going into Newburgh. There's that piece of property to the left. And they always had this green Jag XJS just sitting out in the yard.
That does sound familiar.
And it never moved. And it went, I remember just watching, well, over the years, just watching it deteriorate, because it looked pretty clean and pretty together in the grass, so started to go around it. It got higher and higher, and it got to the point you almost couldn't even see the car anymore.
Oh my god.
And I was so tempted so many times just to go in there and go, what do you want for that thing? I'll get it out of here.
Yeah, I'll just get it out of here for you.
But it disappeared one day, so I don't know what happened to it.
Oh boy.
Well, aside from cars, I mean, like, there's all those other things that you just kind of stumble upon. You're like, you know, the barns themselves, you know, the barns themselves are covered up in foliage and whatnot. You don't even know they're there.
No.
So that could be part of the reason why you can't, you don't even know what's inside the building, because you don't know the buildings there.
You don't. And some of those buildings are so packed. I mean, often the previous owners were just hoarders or pack rats, which happens to a lot of farmers, especially, you know, back in the day. And it's amazing. I've been into some. It's like, how does this place not collapse under its own weight? I mean, the guy stored all his engine blocks and engines upstairs, right? And then downstairs is a bunch of, you know, old farm equipment, some cars, and, you know, everything under the sun.
Yeah, and they claim they know everything in there. I don't. They do not.
They do not.
It's like, you know that show American Pickers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, it's like, and some of those, they'll try to buy something off some guy. It's like, no, I can't do that. I can't take that low price. You just look at it, the thing's a piece of junk, whatever they're trying to negotiate on. It's like, you should be glad they're there taking it off of your hands. Mm-hmm. Almost. But it is just pack rat mentality. It's hard to explain.
Exactly. It's hard to explain. Yeah, it's just something else.
Kind of on that note, we've talked about him before, but Jared McCullough, who's related, or his in-laws are the Emery Porsche people.
Mm-hmm.
And Rod Emery's pretty famous these days. He's got his business now in North Hollywood, and he's had a lot of those celebrity clients. But his dad, Gary, they used to have the shop up here in Oregon, and it was a piece of property outside of town. And just for years, I remember going there as a kid because, you know, my dad, you know, who you worked with as well, you know, he worked with Jared, you know, and that's how we got the connection there. But it just was just old Porsches just lined up just out and just next to, you know, these little gravel roads, just 911s, 356s, and they were parts cars, is what
sure.
they were, you know, so they weren't necessarily sitting there riding away, but they were still just kind of sitting there riding away, and you just go, oh my God, this is just almost kind of surreal to look at.
What's this doing out here in this, you know, farmland? All of a sudden, here's a bunch of Porsches.
Yeah, exactly. And mind you, of course, it's hard to really do any kind of barn find or picking if it's not in a barn in Oregon, because we have these things called blackberries.
Oh, yes, we do. We have blackberries that have the base of almost like the you know, trunk of a tree. I'm not joking. I mean, they're ridiculous here in Oregon just because of how quick things grow.
And they just they can totally pollute a piece of property. And I have some family in Canada, and every time they come down from Alberta, they're always like, "Wow, you know, especially in the summertime, wow, you guys, you got all these blackberries growing everywhere. You always got fresh blackberries." It's like, no, it's not cool, because if anyone doesn't know, a blackberry is not a fluffy, cuddly plant. It's got barbs on it that are half an inch at least, and are razor sharp.
Yeah, unless you got a team of pet goats going at those all the time, yeah, they're a lot of fun.
Yeah,
they're almost impossible to get rid of.
A blackberry bush will swallow a building.
You know? Yeah, no, they will.
Yeah, on that note of just kind of abandoned things and places in general, you know, I'm working on a new documentary, right?
Yep.
One about Cornucopia, which is actually a ghost town in eastern Oregon. It used to be a gold mining town, but it was shut down during World War II and during the 1940s. So that film is nearing completion. There's still some stuff we're doing in post on it. But if you do want to go check that out, another website we'll put in the description box below. It's acopiafilm.com, acopiafilm.com. And you can learn more about this strange and mysterious old, you know, gold town here in Oregon. So with that said, Adam, let's see here. What else do I got here? I actually made a list this time. Talking about the Alpha. Oh, this is a good story. Okay, I got one for you. Old boss of mine, you know, we were having basically the same discussion over lunch, and he goes, because this was a company that sold parts for, you know, classic cars, and he was always being told by customers or people he dealt with that, you know, where'd you find your car? That would be the question. Yes. Where'd you find your car? And he goes, well, I found it in the barn. Yeah, this is what my boss is. I got so tired of hearing that. It's just like, I would lie if I was in their case. It's like, yeah, I didn't find my car in a barn. I found mine at the bottom of a lake.
And some people actually have.
I'm sure they have, now you say that. Wait, okay, so another local one here, you got Detroit Lake, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's not really a ghost town anymore, but where the lake's at, because of where they put the dam, the town used to be where the lake's at. And then they rebuilt the town, the new town, which is still fairly well, it burnt down here not too long ago. So the town that had not burnt down, they built next to the lake. But if that, if you've ever driven past there, you see how the water level will go down, you'll see stumps and stuff
yep.
out there.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to certain parts, you can still find the foundations of buildings.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And like, and you know, when things are underwater, water actually does preserve things better than when it's above ground. So even like the wood frames for doors, you could still see where the doors lead to different rooms.
Oh,
it's just concrete
cool.
and wood. You know, there's not actually a building there, but you could still see that. And there's been times people have found like horse and not the horse, but they found the wagons out there too. Once the lake dries up certain times of the year.
Oh, that'd be amazing to see.
Yeah, no, they didn't find the horse still. That'd be bad. What I mean by it, because it, what I mean by now, it's basically, I mean, the town's in its current location, but we had that bad fire there in 2020 where unfortunately
mm-hmm.
a lot of the town was burned up. So I guess it's on its third incarnation now.
It would be at this point, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah. Well, with that said, Adam, you have, as we're approaching our end time here, you have any other thoughts or stories that have been nagging at you there?
You know, I would just say keep an open mind. You know, sometimes the sale you pass up is the one you'll always regret because there could be something hidden behind the door. So,
yeah, like your dad, so, Matt Tucker.
Yeah. Oh, yep. And another podcast, you can hear the rest of that story. But boy, yeah, you never know when you might be passing up an opportunity of a lifetime.
You know, and that I think that is good advice because I've been in those situations where I've not bought something that I shouldn't because I was trying to be financially responsible.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. It was just going, I have the money for this, but I really don't, so I'm going to pass. And more times than not, I've regretted that just because I would have made my money back, you know, tenfold.
All too real.
Yeah.
All too real. So, hey, sometimes, you know, you'll come out empty-handed, but you don't know till you try. So just I tell people to go and explore and have fun and keep an open mind, you know, when you're out and about. And some once in a while, especially in the summer, pull off at that random sale. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Real quick here, you said you had a friend that preferred vans. Did I hear that right?
Oh, that was...
You don't hear that one too often.
No, you don't. Yeah, you don't. There's some people that... Yeah, you might say it was a relative of mine that him and his son were into some of those old just vintage vans, you know, like the Scooby-Doo era of the Dodge flat race vans.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
That's quite a, you know, like any other car culture, it has its own occult following. And my uncle at one point, I think he had like four of those old Dodge vans and he had one finally restored, but just kind of a different era, you know, that Scooby-Doo era, the 1960s, 70s style is unique on its own.
Well, like a good friend of mine, his dream car was always a Volkswagen Eurovan.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I'm kind of giggling. I'm kind of poking at him. But, you know, the real out of it is, he brought it over to my house one time, and I hopped into it. It's like, it's nice. I mean, it's definitely, like, if you're less, like, a single guy or just a guy and a girlfriend or a guy and a wife, it's perfect for camping.
Oh,
you don't need to pitch a tent or anything like that.
Well, you know, it's like the old Volkswagen bus, you know, the old Volkswagen vans. I mean, look at today here in Oregon, especially, right? I mean, they'll still have just they have a timeless following. People just always love those. In fact, one here in town, the Real Hollywood Video, the owner has an old vintage.
Is that who that is?
That's it.
That's
belongs,
a nice one.
Yeah, that's a nice one. Yeah, he often drives that to work and has it parked out front and it has the, you know, the video store logo on the side.
Well, I think it's Gabriel Iglesias, you know, the comedian. He's like a big collector.
Oh.
VW vans.
Yep.
Yeah. And have you ever driven a VW van? I mean, I've been in the car, but not the van.
I have. Yeah. It's different. You know, someone like me, I'm over 6 feet tall. It's a little awkward with that. You feel kind of squished up front. But I mean, it is interesting. You know, it's not a very large vehicle, but you do feel. I mean, you sit up higher than most, and so you kind of have a. it's kind of like being in a, you know, full size, you know, commercial truck to a point, as far as that feeling I'm above everybody. So it's kind of a neat feeling. They're interesting.
Well, you never know in the future, you know, because sometimes we just get it wrong. Maybe nobody, the most valuable cars aren't Ferraris and Lamborghinis, but they're Scooby-Doo fans. VWs, you never know.
You never know. It all depends on how much following, what people are willing to pay. Yeah.
All right. With that said, I think we're going to start bringing things to a close. Once again, I want to remind everyone, we do have Patreon, and we do have some actually special tiers there. So if you want to help us out, we would more than appreciate that. But if you do help us out, we do want to give back to you a little bit. We do have some extra bonus content, videos, photos, that sort of thing, to enhance your podcast experience. And other than that, by all means, check out the other links in the description box below. And with that said, I think we'll catch you on our next episode of Joyride. How's that sound, Adam?
Sounds good.
All right. Signing out.